I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Dr. Mohan Suntha is the president and CEO of the University of Maryland Medical System. He took the helm of UMMS in 2019 as the institution was reeling from involvement by executives and board members in the scandal that landed a Baltimore mayor in jail. And now his focus is on the pandemic. Dr. Suntha joins me to discuss how UMMS is coping with COVID and what his institution is doing to help in the ongoing pandemic fight. Plus, as jury selection begins in the trial of three men charged in the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, a conversation about the causes and consequences of hate crimes. I'll speak with Dr. Frank Pezzella about how hate crime statutes are enforced unevenly and the complications that those statutes sometimes present to law enforcement officials. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Maryland's COVID numbers continue to trend in the right direction. The CDC reports that more than 85% of adults in our state have had at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. That's about 6 points better than the national average. Our positivity rate is down about 31% since August, and hospitalizations are down since their peak at 65% a few months ago. Our state's wealthiest jurisdiction, Montgomery County, has a vaccination rate of more than 99%. And while hospitalizations for COVID are down, hospitals still struggle with staff shortages and burnout as medical personnel contend with COVID cases that are largely avoidable because they mostly afflict people who aren't vaccinated. My first guest today is contending with that dilemma. Dr. Mohan Suntha was appointed the president and CEO of the University of Maryland Medical System in 2019. The system employs more than 28,000 people throughout the state, and it includes a medical school and a network of community hospitals and other centers at more than 150 different locations. Dr. Mohan Suntha joins us on Zoom from his office in downtown Baltimore. Dr. Suntha, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Glad to have you. So back in June, your institution, as well as Johns Hopkins, instituted a vaccine mandate for employees. Tell us how that's going.
So sure. You're right that back in June, we as a health system were the first in the state of Maryland to move to a mandate associated with employment for all of our nearly 29,000 team members across the state of Maryland. And so when you think about who we are as a health system, we are proud to be a system that consists of 13 hospitals spread across a wide geography of the state of Maryland and 29,000 team members. And foundational to our mission as the state's largest health system that delivers 25% of all hospital-based healthcare in the state of Maryland is the solemn responsibility that we have to keep each other safe as team members, to keep our patients safe and our community safe as we take on the challenges of this pandemic. And so that was really the driving rationale behind moving to a vaccine mandate. And today, with our deadline for compliance with that mandate being October 1st, we are proud of our workforce that once again, as they've done through the entire pandemic, they have leaned in, stepped up, and demonstrated their understanding of the commitment to each other and to our community. So we are now, for our full-time and part-time team members, at a 98% compliance rate. We are working with those few individuals across the 28,000 plus team members to continue to work with them to help them understand the importance of this requirement. It is a requirement that is consistent with the way healthcare organizations have viewed the expectation and responsibility associated with annual flu vaccines and vaccinations for things like mumps, measles, rubella.
And it is a requirement, as you say. So the deal is you either get vaccinated or you lose your employment. It's not that you have the choice of getting vaccinated or being tested weekly or something like that. What's that conversation like with that 2% of your workforce who have yet to be vaccinated? Because it seems to me that there's a particular responsibility, a particular unique nature to a medical system, to have people, perhaps even nurses or doctors, on the floors of the hospitals that you run who are not vaccinated. I don't know of any doctors, but I have certainly heard of nurses, even those who are working with COVID patients, choosing not to get vaccinated in very rare instances. At this juncture, given the 700,000 plus Americans who've died of this disease and given what we know about the vaccines, what is that conversation like with that 2% of the workforce that still does not want to be vaccinated?
So I think, Tom, it starts with the understanding that this has been a conversation that has evolved since the pandemic began. We have tried very purposefully as an organization to keep our team members intimately informed about where we stood in the fight against COVID, what were the facts and information and science that we were helping to develop. And as you point out, a foundational partner to us as the University of Maryland Medical System is the University of Maryland School of Medicine, part of the University System of Maryland. So that alignment with these partners, we are blessed to have some of the international thought leaders who have helped develop novel testing approaches for COVID-19, novel therapies for treating and caring for those who are afflicted with this disease. And then some of the thought leaders internationally who have helped develop the vaccines that represent the single most effective tool we have in the toolbox. So we've continued these conversations. And as you point out, it absolutely stems from an understanding that our foundational mission requires us to do everything in our power to keep each other and our patients and our community safe. It is the reason we exist in healthcare. And so continuing that conversation with anybody who, whether they work for our organization or their patients and or their community members, this is what we believe is our responsibility. It is absolutely a willingness to continually engage in constructive dialogue that helps move people along to a decision point, but also explaining at the end of the day, as leaders, we are tasked with making the critical decisions that help keep our patients and our communities safe. And that's what we're doing here.
Dr. Mohan Suntha is the president of the University of Maryland Medical System. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're not going to take any calls for the next few minutes, but we'd be delighted to listen to your tweets and emails. You can email us at midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR if you have a question for Dr. Suntha. I wonder what you've learned, Dr. Suntha, about the efficacy of mandates. When I spoke with Dr. Tony Fauci a couple of months ago over the summer, I asked him if there were any scenarios in which he would recommend to the president that there be national mandates. And at that time, he said, no, there isn't any political will for it. And then, of course, you know, 6 weeks later, the president did change his mind and issued some mandates for federal employees and contractors, and then strongly encouraging everyone to have mandates and requiring companies with large workforces to have mandates. We're 18, 19 months into this pandemic. We've tried carrots, we've tried sticks, we've tried gentle persuasion, but it does seem that a mandate is the thing that gets those remaining people over the barrier. This is the case in the military and in other large institutions. What do you think your experience at UMMS with the mandate that you implemented back in June teaches other companies, large and small, about their efficacy and their worthwhileness?
So I think that, like other organizations you described, we saw that there were a certain percentage of our population who ultimately chose to be vaccinated as a consequence of the mandate. That's undoubtedly true. But a vast majority of our team members across, again, 13 organizations, as geographically diverse as our health system is across the state of Maryland, a vast majority of our team members understood the importance, the science, the data, and the responsibility they had to each other to be vaccinated. And so I think for us, we also have the responsibility and the opportunity that comes with being on the front lines of this fight against COVID from the very beginning. So when we talk to our workforce, we talk with them about our own experience, about what our data shows within our health system. So when I, as the CEO, talk about the reality of who's in our hospitals, what are the rates of the unvaccinated who are succumbing to this disease versus the reality of the protections associated with being vaccinated, it is data that comes from our own institution. Yes, we absolutely also use statewide information and national information and international data, but it is particularly beneficial for us to speak from our own experience. An example of that is that when you think about how we've been through this fight now since late winter, early spring of 2020, for the first 9 months of this fight, we didn't have vaccines as a tool. So we had a reality of how we were protecting our workforce using protective equipment, using social distancing, using care algorithms and paradigms that did our best to protect our workforce. And we recognize what has happened to the, again, rates of infection from within our community and what's happened to our workforce since vaccines have been available. And it's that kind of conversation and that kind of sharing of information that we believe is helping move people. Unfortunately, as you point out, there are going to be some who choose not to continue their career at the University of Maryland Medical System. Importantly, they're also choosing not to be in healthcare in the state of Maryland within as the hospital industry as a state has also, as you pointed out, followed the lead of the medical system and again, has taken a similar stance. And so that's a critically important position because I think there is, again, validity and strength as industries move together.
And as you mentioned, the deadline for people to be vaxxed in your organization was the 1st of October. We're now 19 days into the month. So you may have to, in fact, terminate some people. There are some people, as you've just mentioned, who will choose not being vaccinated over employment at the University of Maryland Medical System. And you are already dealing with a shortage of nurses and a shortage of medical personnel. There's a high degree of burnout, high degree of stress, a high degree of anxiety. The survey after survey reports that medical workers are really, really coping with just some very, very difficult, stressful situations on a daily basis, and it's taking its toll. What has been the effect of the nursing shortage, for example, on your system, and what can you do to address it?
So as you just pointed out, this is a national issue in the workforce industry of this country, right? So no industry is immune from the realities of what I'll call is some of the paradigm shifts in workforce challenges associated with, in our case, healthcare delivery. And we are not immune to some of those challenges as well. As you point out, the pandemic has had multiple ways of impacting and disrupting the healthcare workforce. We as a system have been purposeful in our approach to providing support to our workforce. What we do internally, whether it's thinking about supporting our workforce from a stress relief strategy, whether it's additional support from compensation, whether it's supporting families as of our workforce who deal with unique challenges, we've tried to approach it from a multi-pronged strategy. There's no question that for your listeners, the single most effective thing you can do to help provide support to the healthcare workforce who is always here to answer the call when our communities are in need is be vaccinated. We continue the conversation, but you're right. One of the challenges we have, again, thankfully, we have been in a position and will continue to be in a position where we've been able to meet the healthcare demands with our workforce as a consequence of the overwhelming acceptance of our decision regarding the need to be vaccinated amongst our workforce. We're thankful that across our workforce, we haven't had to limit healthcare services, as you may have heard in other parts of the country. That's not been our reality. But there is an absolute stress point that comes from our workforce being asked to continue to lean into the COVID challenge and realizing that, again, across our diverse geographies, that there are parts of our communities where vaccination rates are low and hospitalizations are high. And that does take a toll emotionally on our workforce as they're continually asked to lean into the COVID challenge and wanting to see that our communities are also accepting the responsibility that comes with this notion of collective responsibilities we have as communities and as a society overall.
How do you handle the tension that we've heard about between traveling medical personnel, traveling nurses, for example, who go to different communities other than where they live, and they don't have jobs with particular hospitals. They sort of freelance and job themselves out to hospitals. And I know that Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland has had to employ some traveling nurses, but there are times then that that's going to create a situation where the nurses on the floor in the hospital, the people who are your employees, are making far less than those you've brought in from the outside as freelancers. How do you handle that tension?
So again, I think it starts with foundationally how we communicate to our workforce, our collective team, regardless of whether they are temporary agency staffing or a vast majority of our workforce, which is our full-time, part-time employees, communicating sort of where are we in the fight. The truth is the traveler agency resource has been an incredibly valuable resource in this fight against COVID. When we think about how we've tackled some of our challenges as a community, standing up Laurel 345 in the partnership with the state to activate an acute care hospital to help deal with the COVID burden, I don't think the medical system nor any health system could have done that without expanding the workforce, and agency was an important partner in that effort. You're right that as the marketplace shifts, some of those conversations now go to how does one individual work side by side with another individual at different compensation levels? Well, there are both benefits and there are also constraints associated with being a temporary employee. And part of our responsibility as a system is to continue to educate and emphasize what's the value proposition of being a permanent team member within the University of Maryland medical system. Again, with a team member makeup of nearly 29,000 team members across our system, we're blessed to have one of the largest, we are the largest actually, private employer in the state of Maryland. We have, again, team members who have demonstrated throughout this pandemic how they've leaned into the challenge. And our responsibility as leaders is to have them feel supported through this challenge. And so, again, how we communicate and educate about the role of agency staffing in helping to provide needed support for our full-time employees is part of the way we try to communicate the role that each individual plays within the care delivery team.
And I know we need to let you go, but I wonder if I could ask one more question, and that has to do with the costs associated with this. The federal government, HHS, has allocated $100 million to help systems, particularly in underserved areas, attract and train nurses and other medical personnel. Your system, the University of Maryland Medical System, announced about 5 weeks ago that the minimum wage would go up to $15 an hour. That affects about 1,500 folks in your workforce. What do you see? It seems to me that it's going to be a lot more expensive to run the University of Maryland Medical System than it's been in the past. And how do you see that affecting healthcare costs overall?
So I think there's, again, no question that there are needed investments if we're going to widen the top of the funnel when it comes to our healthcare workforce, our labor workforce. What I would say, though, Tom, is there's also huge opportunity that comes with this, because what we're doing is also demonstrating our firm commitment as anchor institutions. When you think about health and wellness of our communities, we know that education is a social determinant of health. We know that employment is a dramatic driver of one's health and wellness and a community's health and wellness. And so as we widen the top of the funnel, as we do things like minimum wage, as we partner with institutions of higher education, whether they be four-year colleges, community colleges, et cetera, what we're doing is actually expanding the footprint we as an anchor institution have in the economic engine of our communities. And we actually help level some of the historic disproportionate issues that existed, or inequities that existed in our communities. And so I'd love the chance to come back and talk to you more about this. But I think, in fact, this is actually a part of the pathway that drives forward in, yes, it's upfront investment, but in the long term, as you just pointed out with your previous question around the difference in costs between full-time employment and agency costs, you actually help level out the costs. And there is no better investment a health system makes than creating stickiness between our team members and our organization. Healthcare is an industry that can help build the middle class. And absolutely, we want to continue to be an important voice in those conversations, because that's what keeps communities healthy. And it's how we ultimately serve our mission comprehensively, not just in the acute care setting when someone's sick, but also in the work of health and wellness of communities.
Well, you talk about stickiness. You know, you're laying on us some pretty heavy medical terminology there, Dr. Suntha, but the door is always open for you to come back and continue this very important conversation. So I very much appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and I look forward to the next occasion.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate your time today.
Coming up, a conversation with a legal scholar, Dr. Frank Pezzella, about hate crimes and the dilemma that they pose to public policymakers and law enforcement officials. It's midday, and he will join me after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR.